This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Oh my God, it's Wednesday already.
Hump day for us all.
Yes.
It's a beautiful day to live in the Willamette Valley. And welcome to the show. This is Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart.
I'm Dave Bourne.
And we're going to talk, oh my gosh, there's so much really exciting stuff happening right now in the Willamette Valley at the Capitol for Salem Kaiser.
Wait, my favorite word. I get to use my favorite word now.
What is it?
We have a plethora of things to talk about.
We have a plethora of things to talk about, and we'll just try to hit the highlights. Folks, we got to talk about Senator Peter Gardner and what he said about the cap and trade bill.
Yes.
We got to talk about the Senate walkout from Republicans, and are they coming back? And, of course, we have to talk about Representative Bowles, a guest on Newsmakers just last Friday.
Yes.
Who will soon be Senator Bowles. And what will be the fate of her House district, and do you live in it? And are you going to be the next representative at the U.S. House of Representatives?
You could be.
You have to be Republican, folks. That's the way the rules work. All right. But can I have a little indulgence here? Let's start with something light. One of my favorite words. It's bemusing to me. We're going to start the show. But hold on, folks. We're going to talk about those things. Wow. No votes to pass. And the real question is, why are there not more defections from the Democrats? Okay. But let's talk about something bemusing here. Start the hour. All right.
I'm up for that.
So, again, this is Oregon State Capitol. Senate Bill 998. It has to do with cyclists.
Okay.
All right, folks. Before you send the hate mail or anything, I like to ride a bike. I've been known to commute on a bike. I don't have any problems with, you know, getting bikes being on the roadways kind of thing. Sometimes I question whether or not public policy should be driven by the bicycle advocate. And this is about an example right here.
Okay. All right. Lay it on me.
Oregon cyclists would be allowed under this bill to just yield but not stop at a flashing red light or at a stop sign.
What?
Yeah. It's like the rolling stop, right?
You mean a California stop?
Yeah, in your car. That's what it's called.
That's
right?
What it's called.
So they, and when it comes to the bicycles here, because they're going through the light, or through the flashing red light or a stop sign without stopping completely, it's called an Idaho stop, is how they refer to it.
Really?
Wow, that goes back to 1982. Holy cow.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the only state that allowed that. And then I guess Delaware passed a
version. And what was the increase in bicyclist deaths?
It went down. Accidents went down.
What?
So that's the study. And actually, I wanted to quote Sherry Springer. She's a Republican representative. And this is via the Statesman Journal, folks, if you want to look it up. But her quote was, "I'm looking for data. Thank you. I'm looking for data in the testimony, and I only see three letters from cyclists. But I want some further information." And that's what she said in a committee meeting. It's like, yeah, thank you. Let's hear from the other side. Who is against this? You know, and you shouldn't have to search for it, but who's against it and what's the science? She wants the data. So apparently, according to the Statesman Journal article, it has resulted in a reduction of accidents. But that just cracks me up.
It's hard to believe. Hard to believe.
Okay. You want equal rights on the roadways, right?
Yeah.
You have to follow the laws and blah, blah, blah. You want absolute equal rights and you want the ability to take a whole lane if you want to take a whole lane, right? Because you own it, and that's the law of the land. But as soon as it impedes you, now this is the difference, isn't it? We're talking about public policy going from equal rights to special rights.
Right.
We want equal rights. We want to be viewed as equals in the roadway. Oh, but we don't want to have to adhere to the rules.
And we don't want to have to stop at a stop sign or a flashing red light. We want to be able to just kind of roll through it, unlike the car.
God bless them for trying to go out and getting it. But, you know, that's the thing. You go out and it's like, well, do we really need to mitigate this? Is this a problem that the legislature needs to, you know, take up? When was the last time you saw a bicyclist pulled over for not coming to a full stop?
Never.
Right? And we're going to state law this thing?
They jaywalk off the sidewalk and into the road all the time, too.
Oh, yeah. The sidewalk, road.
Yeah, all the time. I know I did.
As a cyclist.
I do, actually.
When I cycle, I'm going to pick the safest route.
Yes.
You know, if cars are going 50 miles an hour and I've got an opportunity to be in a bike lane or a sidewalk that's unoccupied, I'm taking it.
Yes.
Rather than, anyway. This is the part I found most amusing because it's one of the advocates. A gentleman's name is Eric Porter, and he sent in an email of support. As a cyclist, I want to be able to move through and pass traffic as quickly as possible.
Well, hello, cars do too.
Hello, thank you. Don't we all? Yeah. We all want to get that. That doesn't make you special. Do you want to get through and pass traffic? As a cyclist, as a pedestrian, I want that.
Yeah, right.
As a, you name it, when I'm driving the car, like, I would like a law where people just have to allow me the middle of the lane and go down the middle. And I don't know. That just cracked me up.
Motorcycles is doing that now.
Know what I mean? Now. I've been doing it for years and years.
Well,
years.
But I mean, they're going down through the middle of the cars in the middle of the lane. It's kind of dangerous.
Yep. Wow, they've been doing that. Well, back in the day, I lived in California.
I'm tempted to open my car door.
Oh, just, man, that's just mean.
I forgot something out there.
Just mean. You're just jealous because they can get through and you can't get through.
Yeah, that's it.
So there are crazy people that do it at highway speeds, and there are people that just take advantage of the gap because they're small. And actually, I don't begrudge them that. You know, it seems a little dangerous, but I don't know. It's legal.
What about on the shoulder? They do
shoulders,
that too.
See, shoulders, no.
A motorcyclist did use the shoulder just the other day.
Did you call 911?
No, I didn't even think about it.
Good. I'm glad.
Because that would have been a waste.
I don't think they would have responded. Anyway, the Idaho stop might become the Oregon stop. And this is one of those
For bicyclists.
That's okay. Where we go from equal rights to special rights. All right. I thought it was amusing.
No,
it's one of those 2,700 bills-ish that they introduce is one of these or things like this.
Are you kidding me?
Things that don't need fixed.
Yes.
Right? Things that clog up. They had a hearing on this thing. Of course,
what?
If the Republicans don't come back, then it's going to die anyway.
Thank God.
It is a Senate bill after all. But
that's anyway. The kind of stuff they're doing. See, you and I talk about this a lot. Why do they do that? That's a waste of time. Special rights like that for a bicyclist? No. If they're going to be on the road, they need to obey all the traffic laws that you and I have to obey in the car or on a motorcycle.
We're going to pick up after our first break where we left off a little bit yesterday. We had Tom Hoffert for the CEO of the Salem Area Chamber, and we had Bruce Anderson. Frankly, I couldn't get enough of them, especially Bruce has a lot to say. We're going to have him back in a couple of weeks to talk about the fate of cap and trade, which, folks, it looks like is going to die, right? Peter Courtney announcing that it was dead. There are not enough votes, mm-hmm. not enough votes. A lot of things surrounding that in terms of which Democrats are no's, should the Republicans come back, and should our legislature allow things to be voted upon if they're not going to pass. I got a big question about that one. Let's take a quick break. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Brent DeHart. We're talking about cap and trade. We're talking about Senate President Peter Courtney announcing that the votes are just not there.
It's dead.
Votes are not there. There's 18 senators, folks. There's 16 votes that needed to pass this thing. Gosh, there's so many numbers about getting this thing to pass. Mm-hmm. 16 votes because there's 30 senators. So it just needs 15 plus one. Needs 16 votes to pass. 18 people are Democrats. And of course, 11 Republicans. Where's my other one?
Where's your math?
I don't know. Anyway, 19? That doesn't equal 30. All right. So, needs 16 votes. And he announced basically and said, hey, this is not a political ploy. This just is what it is. There's not enough votes. We know that Betsy Johnson, Democratic Senator from Scappoose, is a no. She's a hard no, as they refer to her.
Mm-hmm.
So not supportive. And so there's one, but they didn't really announce who else was no in the Democratic ranks. It might be to politically protect them and so forth. And of course, people who believe that this is an answer to saving the world are very, very upset about it. So,
well, you and I came up with a great idea to save the world. Instead of cap and trade, why not just plant 3 more trees each?
Everybody. 300 million. Oh my gosh, that's a trillion trees in America.
See?
There you go.
That would counterbalance any pollution out there.
They can suck up the carbon dioxide and emit some oxygen.
And that's what we all breathe.
But then we'd have some sort of crisis because there's too much oxygen in the air, I think.
We'd all be better off and clearer headed, I think.
All right. Quote from Senator Courtney. No one has told me to say this. There's no strategy to what I'm about to say. There's just Peter. I can just hear him saying that, too.
I witnessed him saying that.
House Bill 2020 does not have the votes on the Senate floor, and this will not change. So if this were to be true and the Republicans believed it, they could return to work. They would return to the state, return to work, and pass some of these other bills that are languishing, of which there's another article about how this number is actually over 100, maybe closer to 150.
I thought it was 140.
Bills that would just die and then have to start up all over again. So, yeah, there are 18 Democrats. Yeah. So Senator Arnie Roblin, he's a Democrat from Coos Bay. He's a leaning towards no. And he reported to the Capitol Bureau he would vote against the bill.
So yeah, because that would kill his economy down in his area, Coos Bay, for sure.
Well, good for him. Good for him to represent the people.
Well, I would hope so.
Work on behalf of the people instead of
a rarity.
We were talking about that yesterday. Do you work for the people? Do you work on behalf of the people?
Or do you work for yourself?
Yeah. So anyway, people are very upset about it. And what really makes me mad, I don't know, frustrated, bemused, is that they're going to attack Courtney for being the messenger. Like, there's a quote in here about him not being fit to serve, to lead. I'm like,
what?
He only has one vote. I mean, he has influence because he's a Senate president.
Right.
But it's like, this is not his doing, people.
No. He's just announcing the facts.
Oh, gosh. Unbelievable.
Jeez, they attack people for announcing the facts?
So this is one of the things I alluded to. We know this to be true of the Senate president. He doesn't like things to go to the floor for all 30 senators to vote on unless he knows it's going to pass. I don't really get that. I'd like to have him on the show sometime to explain. Me, as a citizen, I want my elected officials to be on the record of voting yes or no.
Yes.
Right? I don't want them to just rubber stamp things as they go through because they're going to pass. And I don't know. I'm just going to hold it off. I'm not going to let a bill go down on the Senate floor. You think they would do that sometimes just even for political posturing?
Yeah.
Oh, this thing died, but it was the other party that killed it. We took it to the floor, and it was the other party that killed it, or whatever. But I don't know. It was one of those back to the contract for America and Gingrich back in the 90s when one of the things was, hey, we're going to promise an up-down vote on the floor.
On every bill.
Not every bill, but I think it had to do with balanced budget or Congress adhering to its own laws or whatever it was. But it's a rarity, folks. Are you happy about that? Your representative doesn't even get to vote on it unless they're a member of that subcommittee. Right?
No,
then they count the votes and they can't go on record. I don't know. For me as a citizen, I think more things should get an up-down vote. We want to know what everybody voted on this bill, especially since every advocacy group, whether it be we advocate for forestry, we advocate for single mothers, we advocate for, you know, you name it, old seniors. They all keep report cards on how people voted on bills. Well, if the bill doesn't reach the floor, then we really don't know how to hold them accountable.
That's true.
Right? And to give them an adequate score, because maybe they had something to do with it dying, because they're let's follow the thread here, folks. Maybe he's telling in the caucus, he or she, the representative, I'm out on this. I'm a no. Right? Well, if it doesn't go to the floor, that never comes to pass. Comes to light.
And you never know.
It could be your representative. It could be a representative you want to hold accountable. Why did this bill die? And you never know who's accountable because it didn't get an up and down vote.
I think all proposed bills that make the floor Yeah, I agree. They all need an up-down vote.
Well, yes, yeah, if it gets passed out of committee, it should go.
It should.
All right, so thanks to Courtney's statements. The activists were chanting outside by 11:30 in the morning. They crafted signs. They condemned the Senate president.
For speaking the truth.
And then Senator Michael Denbrough. he's a key author of the bill. Obviously a fervent supporter, right? This description from the article is a barn burner speech. He's a Portland Democrat. It's hard to be green, he said, but it's so important for us to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. He goes on to say, in fact, they're saying that the House Bill 2020 or the Climate Action Program in general is set up to ruin the people of their districts, and that's the rhetoric they're using to go away and stay away. In fact, that's not true, and that's not why they're gone. Nice of him to speak for the Republican caucus, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so...
Hard to be green?
It's hard to be green.
I'm sorry, but I think Oregon is one of the greenest.
I know. Maybe. Okay, folks.
Are we?
Mr. Denbrough, Senator Denbrough, we're all green. We're all green.
We are.
We don't believe in public policy that you believe in. Hey, I'm taking umbrage. I would like to use cuss words right now. In Senator Denbrough's way. We're all green. We don't believe in this public policy. It's like, it's hard to be green. No, it's not. We're all green. It's easy. It's simple. It's popular in Oregon.
Yeah.
The question is, do you want to take steps that you do not believe are right? Do you want our government to take actions that we do not believe are going to help? It has nothing to do with being green or not green. It's like we've ranted about this with the tree huggers. We'll call them tree huggers, not what Rush Limbaugh calls them.
Yeah.
And I'm just not talking about who loves trees because we all love trees.
We all do.
Right? We like them in our yard. We like them in our parks. We like to hike through them. Everybody likes trees, folks. So, but if you're not a no tree should ever fell camp, then you're not green enough. That's the whole thing. That's what's wrong with this whole public policy discourse. It goes right back to 10 minutes ago with the bicycles. You can support bicycles and bike lanes and blah, blah, blah. But if you don't think bicycles should be able to roll through the stops that cars have to stop in, well, then you're not pro-bicycle. You're not pro-blah, blah, blah, options. And it's
extreme.
It's just like people, can't you say no? Can't there be a line somewhere? And that's the question for the Senate Democrats on cap and trade. Please don't just go, oh, this is the flow, and this is where the caucus goes, and we're all going to get a bunch of backlash if I don't vote for it. So, yeah, I guess I'm going to vote for it. Well, now that it's a national news story and everybody's looking, and then the hundreds and hundreds of truckers are showing up saying, this is bad for our livelihood, you're hurting us, and you start to see the reality of the fiscal real world, it's going to harm Oregonians, and then they're having second thoughts. It's only because of this walkout that causes the attention and stops everything that they have an opportunity to stop and think. And it looks like behind the scenes, they lost a couple of votes.
Well, I think the backlash from their constituents may have caused that as well, especially the one from Coos Bay.
Yeah.
Because that town and that area was devastated, especially back in 2008.
So we said, this came up, I think it was off the air yesterday. This is not the Republicans' fault. This showdown, this walkout, this crisis, this halt in doing the people's work, it's not the Republicans' fault. I get people on the left view it as the fault. They want it to be the fault. Here's the thing. You're trying to pass landmark legislation. Only one state in our union, folks, has passed anything like this, and that's California.
Oh, yeah.
One state. So this is not the norm. This is not going along with what the trend of public policy is. This is stepping out there in landmark legislation to do something other countries aren't doing and other states are not doing, and there's a lot of things to debate about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they can't get a single vote from the other side. That's a problem. That is a bill. That's a concept that you should not shove through, right? That is the doing of the majority party, folks. If they cannot get anybody to on the other side to say, hey, this is going to be good for Oregon, and it's that far out and politically on a spectrum, then, yeah, you shouldn't be shoving it through. This crisis is your fault, Democrats. It's their fault. Mm-hmm. Republicans had to do it because, as we were talking yesterday, it's the only tool available to them.
Pretty much. They're not the majority. The Democrats are.
They're just going to shove it through. And I've long felt that if you can't get one vote from the other party, then it probably isn't really great legislation.
Good point. I like that one.
I mean, you start with Obamacare, right?
Yeah.
You cannot get one vote, then you did not try hard enough to make it agreeable and digestible and acceptable to a majority of Americans.
And never pass anything and then read what's in it. Ever.
Oh, you should pass it and then never read it, right?
Oh.
Read it after the fact.
Yeah. But we have to pass it to know what's in it. No.
We have to keep reminding people who are partisan that they don't represent the majority of Americans.
That's true.
Neither the Republicans or the Democrats have a majority of Americans in their party. There's a huge block in the middle, 35% that are unaffiliated. They're independent or they're a minority party.
They hate both sides.
But that's the thing. It's like, oh, well, we represent everybody. I don't even think you represent every Democrat.
Nope.
Not even every Democrat in Portland. They might have, they're going to trust their leadership, but they kind of have doubts on cap and trade. And is our gasoline really going to go up? And it's going to cost more to heat my house. And I just had my third baby. Some of those people are Democrats. They can't all be thinking cap and trade's a great idea.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
To be green, says Senator Michael Denbrough. And he's speaking on behalf of. He's flat out saying this is not why the Democrats the Republican senators have walked out. So this is the quote I wanted to read. It's Oregon Business for Climate as the organization. The spokeswoman is Devin Downey Smith, and her quote: "I think it just shows that Courtney is not fit to lead if he's not willing to stand up."
Didn't he just stand up yesterday morning and say, "Hey, the bill, I don't have enough votes for the bill. It's dead."
I don't know what she wants him to do.
But that's pretty much standing up, isn't it?
She wants him to make this thing happen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
She wants to stand up and make it happen. It's like, he can't make people vote a certain way. He can cajole. He can lead. But it's like, so you want to throw... And I'm not often in the case of defending Senator Courtney, but come on, Devin Downey Smith. That's one of those things like, you're not welcome in the building anymore. Gosh.
All right,
we got to take a break. Let's come back because we want to talk about Denise Bowles, right?
Yes.
Because we're about to have a new senator in our area, and we should all know about it. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. This is 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center. And Brent was, I kind of cut him off. So I want you to finish that quote that you were reading from the representative from where?
This Oregon Business for Climate. Spokesman Devin Downey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because this was special. I, if I had known that you had this quote in your toolbox, I would have let you read it before the break.
All right. So she is also as saying that Senator Peter Courtney is not fit to lead because he's not standing up and making these votes happen.
Uh-huh.
Right. All right. She added, "The kids here are fighting for their future. And with a supermajority that we elected..." Right, which a lot of us don't think is a great idea. The supermajority we elected, where people ran specifically on House Bill 2020, which is cap and trade.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why we can't have it all. We have a supermajority. We can have it all.
Wow.
Yeah, and so much for minority rights. Aren't these the same people that are always fighting for minority rights? But they're like, we're the majority, so the minority gets nothing. Let's let that play out. I mean, sink that through.
Let that sink in.
We have a supermajority, so blank the minority, right? They don't get to have a say. We get to have it all.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see. Janine. I can't pronounce his name. So she's saying that she's dismayed about the Republican walkout, and they're trying to thwart our democracy.
Thwart
our democracy. It's actually a representative republic, but okay.
All right.
Anyway, very, very unhappy about this. And what's it'll be interesting to see. Now, here's the question. Should the Republican senators come back, and will they come back? Will they take Senator Courtney on his word, or are they going to check those votes?
They're checking right
and
now.
Will he, you know, make a deal, right, with the Republican leader to promise not to take it to a floor vote? And they can come back and get some of the bills passed. And actually, some of the agency budgets aren't even passed, right?
I don't understand why they wait so long to pass the budgets on some of these things. They're holding them hostage. Oh, that's right. Political fodder.
Yeah. And we were talking about that a little bit yesterday in terms of things that get held out into the end. And
like the school budgets?
The GO package.
Yeah.
The GO package, they call it, where they bundled everything together and said, well, and then they use it as final leverage. Well, the GO package isn't going to go unless I also get this. The GO package isn't going to go unless I also get this. And so, but that's going to be hanging in the balance. So we're looking at over 100 bills. Senate Democrats have circulated over 100 bills that are headed for the trash pile, including budgets for state agencies, top priority bills for the governor, and for the legislative leadership for the Democrats, and even Republican-sponsored bills that are designed to assist rural Oregonians. It goes back to, okay, well, you want these 100 bills. Don't do this supermajority power play thing where you have not convinced a majority of Oregonians that it's a good idea.
Right.
You're telling them that's a good idea. You're not doing it because a majority of Oregonians want you to do this. You're doing it because you want to tell them what's good for them. Right. And you want to hit national news. I don't know why you want to do it. Okay. So this gets down to, and we'll have Bruce Anderson back on in a couple of weeks, but the impact, folks, negligible doesn't even quite grasp the impact that this bill would have on global warming, global climate change.
No.
Negligible doesn't even quite encompass how minuscule or inconsequential this would be. But then you're going to throw everything away at the end of the session here. You're going to create this crisis for something that, here's the thing, folks, it's going to create a government bureaucracy that doesn't exist today.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that'll ever get smaller?
No.
You know why the Department of Energy was formed in the 1970s? The Department of Energy, we didn't even have a Department of Energy. Cabinet-level department.
Okay.
Formed in the 1970s with the goal of reducing our dependence on foreign oil.
Wow.
What is the Department of Energy now? It's mammoth, folks.
Mammoth.
This is a new government bureaucracy. You think it's not going to go the way the Department of Energy has taken in the last 40 years? It doesn't exist today, folks, but it creates it. Two, it creates an unelected number of people, unidentified number of people that are not elected with a lot of money. Some estimates $1.3 billion it's going to mean.
Which would be sucked out of Oregon, basically.
I don't know. I don't know that because we don't know how they're going to spend it. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, they're sucking it out of the economy, forcing payment onto everybody else since, you know, cap and trade.
So something that's not going to affect global warming, despite what all these people with signs that want you to believe.
Right.
No effect. And it's going to form a government bureaucracy. There's reason number two not to have it. For an unknown, unelected people to spending undetermined money on something you don't hasn't been specified. I mean, I didn't use the word slush fund because I didn't want to have my guests have heart attacks yesterday and saying something inflammatory, but it just seems like a massive, massive slush fund that's supposed to be spent in encouraging technologies that are more green, encouraging technologies that reduce our carbon footprint and so on and so forth. However, will it do all of that?
No.
All right. So that's the issue. It's public policy. It goes back. It just makes me so mad when like, well, poor me because I'm green and they're not. And these evil people who don't believe that we absolutely have to do cap and trade right now or we're all going to be extinct.
If going green is so great, how come it's more twice as expensive?
Well,
just saying.
Yeah, that's they want to take money from the carbon producers and then funnel it to technology creators or technology innovators that are reducing carbon use and finding the next generation of technologies, right?
Somebody should remind them that we're carbon as well.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to you about that. When you decompose, I do not want you to release any carbon, please. Try to keep it inside.
Is that why we're buried in coffins?
All right, folks. So if you are not a political junkie, but you like hearing about it, just so you're aware, so the state constitution requires them to stop working on this session, June 30th.
Right. They have 4.5 hours. Or
Sunday night.
Four days and 4.5 days left.
So you can get an extension. You can get an extension up to 5 days, but 2/3 of both houses, the House and the Senate, have to vote to extend the session 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a tall order, I think.
That'd be a lot.
67% of both. So anyway, they're still looking for the Republicans. What do you think? Think the Republicans should risk coming back now, or do you think that they should stay away and not risk that floor vote? It's a tough one, isn't it?
That is a tough one, but I know that they were confirming whether or not they didn't have enough votes for that cap and trade. If that is so true, then I heard that they will be coming back, at least maybe by tomorrow, and wrap up this session.
Okay. Well, so that'll be fascinating.
If in true form, it's true. But they're confirming. They're having their staff confirm it. Because they're still out of state, right?
Yeah, that's what cell phones are for, right?
Right, yeah.
All right, and by the way, folks, they are being fined $500 a day for not showing up. And there's at least some effort to people who are supportive of the walkout say, well, let's just make that up to you, and raising money to make them whole.
Yeah.
Because, these are citizen legislators who don't get paid a ton of money, and they have a real job on the side.
So they left their real jobs to go out of state for something they believe in. That is a true protester.
There you go. A protester. And not just screaming at people with signs.
True protester.
All right.
Doing it the right way.
Enough of that. Denise Bowles, real quick before the break. She got elected to the House just last fall.
Yeah.
Just last fall.
Had her on the show.
She had served one time before as an appointed person to fill in a spot for a vacancy in House District 19. So if you live in House District 19 and she's your representative, we're looking for one good man or woman to serve and keep that seat Republican.
Right.
Right. So that'll create a vacancy. Then it'll be in another appointment process. And what will happen is there'll be a special election next May. And then Senator Bowles will run to hold on to the seat. Right.
Okay.
If you're not happy about this supermajority, then we should be working on behalf of keeping Senator Bowles.
Right.
There's speculation that Paul Evans, who is the state representative and that shares that Senate district, might run for that. I haven't talked to the representative other than I was in his office this session and advocating for a bill and giving him my position on a bill. But anyway,
you didn't ask him that question?
I didn't. It's a very quick meeting, by the way. It's in and out in 10 minutes with those guys. But there's speculation that he would seek a seat should it be vacant.
Okay.
Well, it's not vacant now. Denise Bowles is going to have it.
Correct.
So if you're not familiar with Denise, she's been involved with Marion County Republicans. She works for the Salem Health. She had worked for then House Representative Kevin Cameron, who's now a county commissioner and so forth. So best to you, Senator Bowles. We hope to have her on next month when the session's over and she's a senator and how this is going to... She's probably going to have to start campaigning right away.
Yeah, right.
All right. So good luck to her, and we'll start looking and start feeling out to see who's going to be replacing her. Come back. There's a few things to tidy up happening in Salem before the hour is up. Wow. Cap and trade, Senate walkout, new senator, bicycle rights, and now we have a Salemite baseball player. He's going to go to Oregon State.
Wow.
Like it. We're back. We'll be back to that in just a minute. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to 1430 on KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
These are spacious studios, by the way, too. This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. Brent, before we continue, a caller called in talking about how we can help the senators, and you were talking about there was a FundMe kind of thing going on. StandWithOurSenators.com is the website. You can email the senators and urge them to stand strong, or you can, two, make a donation in support of Stand With Our Senators, or three, share this page and help spread the word. So StandWithOurSenators.com is the website to help our senators.
And once again, thanks to our callers who it's always great to have them bring in information we don't have and also to share their opinions, which we've had earlier this week.
Yes.
393-1430, should have memorized by now, 503-393-1430, 1430 like 1430 KYKN, folks.
Right.
So call us in if you want to weigh in on a show or if you want to pass along some information or if you have an idea for something that we are not covering and you would like us to talk about here on Newsmakers, your noon hour where we talk about primarily local issues affecting your quality of life and your wallet.
Which a lot of this affects your pocketbook lately.
Hey, there's a great article I want to point out in the Salem Reporter. It's online. And if you're not a subscriber, I'm sure you can get X number of articles free kind of thing. But for $10 or something, it's well worth it. And it's what is the city doing with your money? We talked to the mayor a little bit about this. But it's a nice by the numbers where it kind of helps you digest it. It's a little misleading because it says there's $600 million in general in budget. It's just true. It's over $600 million. However, the general fund where the city councilors and the mayor really have any play with where it gets spent is only like 130 of it. It's less than a quarter of it.
$130 million
is the general fund. And the general fund is what pays for the things
I could do with that. Yeah.
You could pay for fire and police for every citizen in America.
It would run efficiently.
So anyway, the total, it's great because it tells you what's the total size, how much has it grown. It's not exactly runaway, but it's growing by 4.1%. Okay, so you take inflation in, which is right around 2%, and then it's 2% beyond that in terms of how much it's growing. Again, misleading because some of that money being spent are federal funds being spent on housing authority and funds that the city doesn't have any discretion in how they're spent, right?
Hard funds for schools and things like that.
Things that might be, you know, federal grants, things that might be dedicated funds like the gas tax. Gas tax cannot go in the general fund.
Right.
The water and sewer fund cannot go in the general fund. They can't take it out of your water bill and put it into streets. They can't take it out of your water bill.
Contrary to what we all believe.
Yeah. Anyway, one number is really interesting is $3,800 cost per person to run the city of Salem. And that includes all of these funds, mind you. Obviously, you'll be a quarter of that. So maybe $1,000 a person is what it costs to run the general fund, $1,000 a person.
That's probably close to what your property taxes would be?
For the city of Salem, that's a very good question. I always think in terms of my property tax bill and in its totality, and I never really look at, well, which, you know, taxing jurisdiction is it? Because you've got Salem and you've got Marion County and you've got the transit district,
right,
and you've got the school district and you've got special districts.
You should look at that.
I'm in Polk County. So
still?
Yeah.
You've got to look at the deductions on your tax bill for your house.
So 24 total funds for the city, 24 total separate funds like the ones we've discussed.
Wow.
$9 million of shortage. It means you're going to spend $9 million more than they anticipate coming in.
How do they do that?
Because they have a carryover balance. They're taking out savings, as the mayor would say.
Oh, okay.
And they're taking, and that is exactly the gap that the city manager, Steve Powers, is trying to
plug.
That they're trying to plug that gap.
Got
and
it.
That's why we're seeing these revenue increase things coming up in a couple of weeks.
Now that you just explained that, now I understand.
You're just getting that?
There's so many big numbers that the mayor was tossing around. I didn't get that until you just said that.
Yep, they're taking $9 million.
So they have carryover of how much?
Mm-hmm.
It's like savings.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got my checking account, I got my savings account, and the city is short $9 million.
Right.
So they got to take it out of their savings, mm-hmm. and somehow they got to make up that savings.
Yeah, or pretty soon you'll be in the
or
red.
Or plug the hole.
Yeah.
That's why they're trying to raise that other money.
I like stop the bleeding.
Right? Yeah, that's a good one too.
They get new, because otherwise the other option is you can't do that forever. You're going to run out of your $9 million, right?
Yes, and then it causes bankruptcy.
And then you're going to eventually just have to cut. You're going to have to find somewhere to cut $7, $8, $9 million. So, that'll be a decision for the citizens of Salem to decide. Do you want to cut services or do you not want to cut services? And they'll get to vote on that. Just keep in mind that, you know, you might have a payroll tax. I mean, sorry, an income. They call it payroll tax because they don't like to say income tax, right?
Yeah, it's a payroll tax right off your check.
And also the flat fee.
Fee on your water bill?
Utility bill, yep.
Yeah, water bill.
Water and stormwater and sewer. They're itemized out.
I know they are now. That's kind of...
The three changes that they made when they passed the budget, and we didn't actually have much time to talk to the mayor about this. They added a youth development coordinator, $176,000. I'm hoping that is youth development coordinator plus whatever they're coordinating, because that's an expensive person.
Yeah, right.
A long-range planner, cost to the budget, $108,000, and a climate action plan, $50,000.
But they also cut the homeless home shelter thing by half.
Yes, and the money that was going towards helping transition homeless in Salem, they did cut the, I think it was $140,000 and went to $70,000. That was part of the city manager's proposed budget. So it wasn't a change that the city council had implemented. It was recommended budget by the city manager, and they agreed with it and passed it.
Hmm.
So those three examples, though, were things that were not on the city manager's budget that they added back in. And they overruled him, as it were. So,
yeah. I think the mayor didn't agree with that either, though. He's mentioned that. He was confused as if they have a budget shortfall, why are they adding things back in? And how are they going to continue to pay for them?
It's not unusual. I mean, a city manager is going to make decisions that are not political for the most part,
right?
Although there'll be some input obviously from a mayor and counselors, and he wants things that are viable, but he's going to make a recommendation, but the public policy body of the city council gets to make the decision. So you have an administrator that says, I think this is most prudent, and then the public policy body gets to say, that's not aligned with our goals, and so we want you to do this. Even if it's spend more money than you want to spend or cut something deeper than you want to cut.
There's a big difference between want and needs, though.
Uh-huh. Well, they get to decide what they want to spend money on. All right. Real quickly, I want to congratulate Ryan Brown. He's a South Salem baseball player. Ryan Brown was a South Salem baseball player. He's signing to play at Oregon State.
Nice.
And he was going to walk on, and Oregon State just recently gave him a scholarship.
Nice.
So at least he got a little money from Oregon State. He was recruited, or he's drafted, actually, by the Yankees organization. Huh? Hey, Ryan, if it were the Yankees, I'd say no, too. You know, Giants, maybe not. But congratulations. That is awesome to see a young baseball player from our area do well. Good luck at Oregon State. This is All Newsmakers right. with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.